Right now, Andrew Donaldson with us from Ordinary Times Magazine. Andy, what's going on today, my friend? Good morning.
Good morning. I personally had a great weekend, but good Lord, what a horrible amount of news and headlines and mess coming out of the weekend. Just seems like bad story after bad story. There was some good news in there, here, there, and yonder, but, man, we need to hurry up and get to Christmas here, man. It's rough out there for folks.
I mean, my head is usually buried in the sand, as you kind of highlighted over the weekend. I like to split from the news of the day, particularly when it's death, destruction, despair, and chaos, innocent people dying, for no good reason, in places like Australia, up at Brown University, over in Southern California, the death of legendary movie director and actor Rob Reiner, along with his wife, killed in an apparent homicide. Yeah, that led the news. Two Army National Guardsmen killed in an ambush-style attack in Syria. I guess we could start from there. You know, the average American has no idea that we have American troops in a place like Syria, or maybe just caught wind of that. Hey, we have National Guardsmen stationed and deployed in the middle of Syria. What gives? So, Andrew, as someone who served our country, give us the lowdown just in how involved, even though we're not maybe in an active duty combat situation, how involved our United States military is across installations throughout the world, including places like Syria.
Worldwide all the time, because that's what we do. The thing is, only when there's a big thing that pops through the news cycle does people recognize it, but there's troops everywhere doing all sorts of things. Very few of them are combat related. A lot of them are things like assisting civil affairs. A lot of them are logistical support. A lot of them are training other people's militaries. We do a whole lot of that. We have, of course, security forces that have been in, Syria and Western Iraq and that area for decades now, and especially for the last few years, because since we put down ISIS, there's still remnants out there that we're keeping an eye on and dealing with. It's obviously a very volatile situation, especially with the regime change that went on in Syria. So we have people out there, but we have people worldwide all the time. People don't understand. One of the largest overseas commands we got is stuff we're doing in Africa and Asia. There's more troops, and even with the massive drawdown of the last few years, there's still tens of thousands of troops in Europe and Asia and other places. It's always the service. The service is always dangerous, and it's always worldwide in places a lot of people don't even know about. And that's one of those things when you talk about, supporting the troops and stuff. Most people will never know 99% of what the military is doing, but it's always dangerous, and there's always somebody out doing the job. And it's sad when this happens, where you have two deaths, and the other news of the weekend kind of overshadowed it. So I appreciate you bringing it up.
Andrew Donaldson, ordinary-times.com. A lot of talk here in South Carolina about judicial reform moving into the next legislative session, which will begin with the turn of the calendar in January of 2026. They'll resume the two-year legislative session come January. You talk about how judges are selected. Should it be on a merit-based system with groups of lawmakers, many of who happen to be attorneys on the defense side, picking the judges? When it comes to magistrates, what are the qualifications? Should the governor have more say with executive power? Not so much in terms of the process and the way we select our judges on the bench, but more and more stories coming out of every corner of our country pertaining to judges who obviously have oversight when it comes to how they hand down consequences, particularly for repeat offenders. And in many cases, you're hearing more and more, given the topic du jour from the administration as it pertains to illegal immigration. When it comes to slapping the wrist and getting a slap on the wrist for consequences, particularly when you have a person who is in the crosshairs of the law, not only charges but potentially convictions, getting light sentencing, what should come of this? Because I read a story, and again, you could pick and choose and cherry pick stories all you want, but it does seem to be weighing heavy on a lot of people, including our lawmakers here in South Carolina. I saw a story out of Michigan where he was a criminal, illegal immigrant, and you could say what you want about that situation, but he was in our country, deported six times, convicted, and again, this is an individual case, but a very heinous act involving the rape of a woman. He got 3 years, and he could be released from prison as early as July of 2028. He was in the crosshairs prior to that, but there was a judge who refused to sentence him to further consequences because they don't adhere to detainers through Immigration Customs Enforcement. And essentially, you know, this guy will be let out on the streets, and unless he gets apprehended by immigration, he may very well be on the streets to commit further acts. And I'm not just singling out illegal immigrants. We hear this story. We saw it from the death of the woman in Colombia, that poor young girl, Logan Frederico, the woman, the Ukrainian refugee in Charlotte. The story goes on and on. Should judges be held to the same or some sort of standard when it comes to their record and the way they handle consequences for crimes committed? Or is that a district attorney issue and a lack of communication when it comes to what the prosecution should do and how the judges should rule?
A little bit of both. You need to get our friend Em Carpenter back on because you've had her on for various things. This is one of her bailiwicks she really gets on. Of course, she's been both a prosecutor and a defense attorney, both. And she'll talk about, like, I've got somebody that's basically innocent that's getting railroaded here, and then she'll talk about prosecuting people that are clearly guilty and can't touch them because of the technicalities of the law. This one is really tough because you need a balance where judges should not be subject to just popular opinion, because then, you know, the rule of law can be really swayed by public opinion in the moment, and you don't want that. But at the same time, you also have to look at these judges that, because the ones, again, you have thousands and thousands and thousands of rulings that get no attention, then you get a judge that makes a horrible mistake or does something maliciously stupid, and that's the one everybody focuses on. So you don't want to make the system worse based on a knee-jerk reaction. But, yeah, there needs to be some accountability here. But it's the entire system, because a lot of these judges' rulings, people go, don't make any sense. The judges are bound by laws that don't make sense, and they're bound. They can only rule on what the prosecutor brings forth to the court. They can't recharge somebody. If a prosecutor charges them underneath what they should be charged, they can only rule with what's been in front of them, and vice versa. There's a lot of things with things like sentencing guidelines that you can do. There's things with restrictions. There's all kinds of reforms that need to be done, but this is one of those problems we talk about with a lot of other things. If you just take one slice of it, judges doing bad rulings, and you only focus on that, you're going to end up with a bigger mess than you started with, because what you really have is a systemic problem top to bottom that goes all the way down to talking about bail reform and those things, all the way up to the judges and the prosecutors at the top. But everything in the middle has to work right so that whole process goes fully. So if you just pull the top piece out and start focusing on that without going through the whole system, the prosecutors, the system, all of it, you're going to wind up making it worse than it was to start with. So I do like a lot of what you, and you've had a lot of the folks on the show talking about this. I think people understand now, it's like, hey, this isn't a one-shot fix. This is a systemic thing, and we got to look at the whole system.
Hey, when it comes to things like cashless bail and bail reform up in North Carolina, your neck of the woods, lawmakers passed and reluctantly Governor Stein signed IRENA's law, which took effect on December 1st of this year, increasing pretrial restrictions for violent crimes, eliminating cashless bail for some offenders, mandating mental health evaluations. There were some changes to the death penalty rules. This all in regards to the case that we mentioned a moment ago involving the Ukrainian refugee stabbed on that light rail in Charlotte. When it comes to eliminating written promises to appear, i.e. cashless bail, requiring judges to set conditions for repeat violent offenders, is this in the right direction in terms of reforming some of the laws or creating some further restriction for those who are circulating through the system, on any given day-to-day basis?
Well, it's aimed at – the problem with the Charlotte case is when you have somebody – this was the extreme case because it was somebody that was a murderer who turned around and murdered somebody on video. But you have other cases, too. Like, you have people that have 5, 6, 7, 8 DUIs. You have people that have multiple offenses over and over and over again. And people go, why in the world are these people on the street free to walk around? And it goes back to a lot of those sentencing guidelines, judges, all that stuff that we just talked about. The bail system in and of itself is not going to fix repeat offenders. The bail system, and this is a really complicated subject that you really got to get into, but one of the problems with the bail system is you need a system where people don't necessarily need to be in confinement, but they need to be under the supervision of the court. But at the same time, and this is the tricky part of all this, we need a criminal justice system at the lowest level, at the bail and the regulatory and the fine level, that isn't creating more criminals. And it seems like right now what we're doing is we're letting too many of the hardcore criminals go out all the time, and we're taking people with minor problems and turning them into career criminals because the system's chewing them up. There's got to be a happy medium between those two things somewhere. We haven't quite found it yet.
Well, you talk about happy mediums and how one shoe fits as the other is supposed to, and maybe a little bit of both playing into this. I mean, look at the latest high-profile situation from the Charlotte Light Rail stabbing earlier this month. Incident that has brought the issue again of illegal immigration to the conversation, and you've got the mayor over there essentially just labeling this as a mental health issue. Well, there may very well be something mentally wrong with this suspect who has been deported twice, but at the end of the day, right, I mean, if the laws were upheld from the onset, some of this stuff would not be going on. Again, I'm picking and choosing where I'm going with the conversation, but when elected officials who hold very high leadership positions direct your attention one way without bringing up the obvious, isn't that where all the mistrust comes in when it comes to the American people on any given day?
Yeah, and picking and choosing how we want to slap the mental health label on stuff is really a problem here, and the mayor should be called out on it. Mental health is a preventative thing. Now, we know, we got all the data, when it comes to violent crime, preventative is the only way you really do it. You've had law enforcement on your shows for years and years and years. Well, they tell you, like, everything's prevention, because once it goes to crime, there's really nothing you can do about it. Now you're just reacting. Preventative, preventative, preventative. Mental health care and the broken mental health care system in America is a preventative thing to prevent crime. Once they've gone to violence and done crime, it's not an excuse to excuse the violent behavior of the criminal. Now, that doesn't mean you don't take that into account with sentencing, and there's certain violent criminals that need to be in a mental health care facility instead of a hardcore prison. That's all true. But we need to focus that is a preventative thing. So if you're a mayor and you haven't had programs for preventative mental health care, you don't get to hold that up as a shield on bad policy later on. I'm not picking on her. Lots of politicians do this. Lots of pundits and talking heads do this. But you can't break out the preventative after the fact and go, oh, this is what this is. No, you have to keep things in their proper place. It costs a lot of money to do preventative mental health care and preventative crime. It costs a whole lot more money to clean up the mess if you don't do the preventative. So we need to have an honest conversation about, yeah, this is going to cost a lot of money to do it, but it's better than having people murdered on the streets by people that we probably could have helped a year or two ahead of time and prevented the whole thing to start with.
All right, last but not least, let's go to the upstate, because I caught this story from over the weekend in Spartanburg County as the number of measles cases continues to rise across 14 different schools. Within that county in the upstate, you've seen an uptick elsewhere around the country as well. I kind of laid out what myself and my wife were discussing with our doctor when it was time to vaccinate little Sophia a couple years ago. And we had just asked a couple of questions. And really, it was just for information purposes only. We were not in the non-vax crowd. Vax crowd was like, hey, all right, you're going to double up and triple up on all these different sorts of things. What is it? Could we spread it out? We had just simple, honest questions that we were wondering to get as concerned parents. We were met with, I won't say rude, but just an eye-opening response from the doctor being like, hey, I know best than you do. Just leave it to the doctors. All right, I leave it to the doctors until a thing comes, COVID comes around, and they say, get the jab and everyone will never catch COVID again. So the distrust over the last 5 years to me has led to some of these decisions. There was a small portion of our population that was already on that non-vax sort of crowd, the RFK juniors of the world. But when it comes to things like the measles, the mumps, I mean, you and I got that jab. You were in the military. You got jabs, okay, and you had no idea what the heck they were sticking you with. But overall, is it the 10-plus million people who came into the country potentially spreading these viruses? How do we all factor into these decisions to make sure that our kids are safe and on the up and up and can live longstanding, healthy lives in the future?
Yeah, first thing, you need to go get a new doctor. I've had doctors that told me, trust me, and it pretty much ruined my life. You know that whole story. We won't rehash that now. And then you get to Duke 10 years later, and it's like, this guy had no idea what he was doing. I'm like, tell me about it. We learned from COVID that medical professionals are really bad at communication. Like, can we all just agree on that one right off the top? They're bad on TV. They don't know how to talk to normal folks, a lot of them, not all, but most. They don't know how to talk to people. And when you can't talk to somebody about a very sensitive topic, measles is a home run for a doctor. Like, hey, we eradicated this illness for all practical purposes in America. It was gone. We had it beat with this vaccine. The vaccine is amazingly safe. There's three people out of every so many people that have a reaction to it. This is like a proven vaccine. But if your doctor can't communicate that little bit of basic information in 45 seconds that I just did and instead goes to smug and you go to the internet and you start reading all the junk stuff, that's how this stuff proliferates. So it's a responsibility. Parents need to be responsible and go to doctors. But the doctors, I don't think the doctors and the scientists and the medical professionals had a reckoning of what happened at COVID. But, yeah, there's a lot of crank and stupid information and bad people on the Internet profiting off it. But a lot of them needed to find a mirror, too. Like, you know what? This is a social media age. Everybody has a lot of information. I need to learn how to talk to people in a way that they understand, not just in my doctor speak, and not think this white coat makes me perfect. And I need to explain that this vaccine is good and explain that we have 70, 80 years of good data on it and assuage those fears and take those two or three silly questions because somebody got on a message board and answer them with some facts. Everybody has to have accountability here, and the medical profession still hasn't figured out yet that, like, if I can't get on TikTok and Instagram and explain this in 30 seconds, people aren't going to trust me. That's just the world we live in. Is it fair? No. But that's where we live, and they need to do that.
Lastly, should we be concerned with the millions upon millions of people who came into the country unvetted, not known where they come from or what their history is as it pertains to our overall general health in our society?
Yeah, always. Everybody knows how to fix this problem. You have to secure the border. You have to deal something with the illegal immigration. We all know that. And then at the same time, you have to fix the legal immigration so that you do have tracking and you do have people that are checking in and you do have people going through the process. You got to do both at the same time. And as long as we only do one or the other, we're going to have this pendulum swing back and forth. Nobody gets served well. The country doesn't get served well. The immigrants don't get served well. And we're going to have all this chaos back and forth instead of just doing both at the same time, fixing the problem and going forward as a healthy country. But we don't have that right now.
You know what, Andrew, it's almost like they like to kick the proverbial football back and forth just to keep an issue at the top of the people's minds come election time without actually coming up with a steadfast solution to any given issue that we're facing as a country today.
Yeah, buddy, good for content for guys like us. Not good for the country, though. But, yeah, it's just you're talking about the judges. You're talking about the medical stuff. Do something. Do something now. Make me feel better on my Facebook feed. And they do one little thing, and it's what the engineers and computers talk about. You know, it's the fix that fails. Hey, we fixed this. Yeah, but you didn't think of anything else for the repercussions. You just pulled this one Jenga piece out and then wonder why the whole thing fell down. Boy, there's a lot of that going around.
Ordinary-Times.com. You can find the work of our friend Andrew Donaldson, who joins us every week now here on Hot Talk 99.5. Andy, I hope you have a great Christmas with the family, my friend, and we'll do it again in the new year.
Anytime, brother. Appreciate you. Appreciate, bro. You guys have a good one.
It's Joe and Bro, Andrew Donaldson, with us at ordinary-times.com.